Here we go. All right. We got a great big Kufar Akbar. Everybody, hello. This is another edition of Radio Free Kafiristan. This is a radio program dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Christianity and Islam. We examine the evidence for both of these faiths in order to arrive at the truth that leads to us to thus end. Thus go we, not just I. I got a whole room full of people here in chat and also on in the studio. Shalom, peace, blessings. We are here every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Central Time. I got to make sure I get that right. This is, of course, Eric Secifer. I use that name because I kind of like it. As a matter of fact, when I wrote an op-ed to the local newspaper, and I used that name, and they printed it. it was right after that Pulse nightclub shooting, and they bit off on it. Anyway, okay, we are coming to you live from the depths of the cavernous cave of the Kafir cave in Dar al Harb, Kafiristan. Remember, a Kafir is somebody who does not heed the beliefs and prescriptions held by the religion of Islam. I noticed Bill Warner, our friend Bill Warner, got kicked off of Rumble this week. I don't know if you guys heard this. I'm on his mailing list, and he made some video and Rumble. I mean, it's supposed to be this free speech bastion of utopian. Yeah, and they kicked him off of Rumble. So there's something afoot, something amiss. He's been demonetized by Facebook. His Patreon account has been torn down. His Amazon, I mean, they've done everything to that guy to try to cripple what he does. And I have I got most of his books on my Kindle. Whenever I'm out and about, I take my Kindle with me and I read his books there. He's a great author, great speaker. He's just got a real bad case of OLD, though. I mean, if you look at this guy, he looks like he's 77, 78. Do you guys know how old he is? Somebody talking?
You know, I accidentally pushed something, and it. I'm sorry for
the. You're always up to something there, Steve. You got to knock that stuff off. Okay, so tonight, what are we doing tonight? Tonight, we are going to look at the laws of logic. A lot of people call them the rules of logic, but actually logic follows not only the laws of nature, but also philosophically follows the rules that would – and I'm sure Rad's going to explain it here in his PowerPoint. And then what we're going to do is we're going to take those laws, and then we're going to juxtapose those up against Islam and see if Allah or Tawheed, or the application of Tawheed, follow these rules of logic. I don't think it's going to end well for Allah. However, Rad might disappoint us all and mess this all up. We shall see. I have the book here. The Shahada is in the Quran, right?
No.
Well, what do you mean it's not in the Quran? You mean the Shahada is not in the Quran? I thought that we have to say Muhammad is the prophet of Allah. Come on.
No, but by the way, Allah is a very fearful God, so try not to get him angry.
I won't.
He does get angry.
Right, you're right. I won't mock. All right, so let's pull Rad's slideshow up here on the big screen. And Rad, you go ahead and take the mic and you lead us through what you want us to learn this evening. Go ahead.
All right. Well, first of all, I just want to say that I urinate in Al-Azir. Just saying the Islamic God Al-Azir. So I fear him. But anyway, so does Allah Ta'eed. And I put / Ta'eed because these two things are kind of interchangeable. You can't have one without the other. But anyway, does Allah / Ta'eed follow the laws of logic? Okay. For instance, so if you believe in Allah, then you have to believe in Tawheed. If you believe in Tawheed, then you have to believe in Allah. You can't remove these two. You can't separate them. Okay? Now, this is not to say that a Muslim revert has to know the three doctrines of Tawheed or understand them. Okay? Just like, you know, a new Christian convert doesn't really have to know the intricacies of the Trinity. But again, if you want to grow in faith and your knowledge and your understanding, you're going to study these things, and you can't dispute these things. In other words, you know, when I first became a Christian, I did not understand what the doctrine of the Trinity was. So it was just enough at that point in time to just believe it, right? But over the 10 years, I learned, and I learned, I studied, and I can understand it to the best of my ability. I cannot refute it. I cannot say I'm a Christian. I don't believe in the doctrine of the Trinity, because that would make me not a Christian. In the same way, if you're going to be a Muslim, you can't say I don't believe in the doctrine of Tawhid. Okay, I hope that makes sense to everybody. By the way, so if you go ahead and click your mouse there, Eric, go ahead and pull up the next slide. So, we as Christians, or actually, we should believe this, that the laws of logic are eternal. They are not subjective. In other words, they have always existed. Okay? The reason why they've always existed is because of the doctrine of the Trinity. In other words, our God presupposes logic. Okay, our universe that he created presupposes logic, okay? You cannot have, okay, anywhere in the universe where these laws do not apply in creation. And God himself, because he is the source of logic, okay, because he is logic, our God is logic, okay? Or not, I shouldn't say our God is logic, but our God is logical. These are the rules, okay, that he puts forth, okay, you can't contradict them, okay, but let's
keep going. Hey, Rad, can I ask a question, if possible,
sure.
Or not? But, like, sure, who told you that Islamic scriptures or Islamic Allah lives by the laws of logic?
Well,
like, that's a false assumption to begin with.
Yeah, no, but that's a good question, and we're going to actually get to that. We're going to answer that from the Muslim perspective.
Exactly.
It's extremely funny. But anyway, so let's just go over what these laws of logic are, because I'm only talking about three laws of logic. These are kind of like the original, the universal, or whatever. These are the things that kind of started. They're traced back to Plato and Aristotle, okay, who came up with this, which I have some quotes from them. But anyway, go ahead and pull up the first one there. So the law of logic, well, first of all, the law of non-contradiction. Go ahead, go to the next one. Law of identity. Go to the next one. And law of the excluded middle. Okay. So go to the next slide. Okay. The law of non-contradiction. Go ahead and pull up the next bullet point. Okay. So this one states that contradictory propositions cannot be both true in the same sense and at the same time. Okay. That is the stressor right there. In the same sense and at the same time, okay? Two propositions, A is B and A is not B, are mutually exclusive. That cannot be true, okay? Because if at the same time and in the same way. Go ahead, go to the next slide.
Hey, Red, can you hold on just a second? I want to address something that's going on here in chat. I don't know who this roughneck person is. Evidently Chris invited him to the show because Chris is a panelist here. I don't know what his issue is, but he's said somebody's a dumb person. Let's just be nice there, guys. Behave there, or we'll just remove him. Okay.
Focus on my voice.
There you go.
All right. So, for example, this is a common class one. A chair cannot be inside the room and outside the room at the same time and in the same way, right? That's a logical contradiction. Go to the next one, please. Okay, law of identity, go to the next one. Okay, so this basically says whatever is. Okay, let's explain some more. Go ahead, go to the next one. For instance, A equals A. A cannot equal B if B does not equal A. Pretty much, okay? A always has to equal A, B always has to equal B, and B can equal A if A equals B, okay? But anyway, go ahead. So basically, a thing has to be able to identify itself. It has to be separate from something else. It cannot be the same. Let's read this. This is actually from Aristotle. First then, this is at least is obviously true, that the word be or not be has a definite meaning, so that not everything will be. So and not so. Again, if man has one meaning, let this be a two-footed animal. By having one meaning, I understand this. If man means X, then if A is a man, X will be what being a man means for him. Okay? It makes no difference, even if one were to say a word has several meanings, which is true. If only they are limited in number for each to, for, to each definition, there might be assigned word. That's key, a different word. And again, remember, law of non-contradiction in the same way, in the same sense, at the same time. Okay. For instance, we might say that man has not one meaning, but several. One of which would have one definition vis-a-vis a two-footed animal. Well, there might be also several other definitions, if only they were limited in number, for a particular name might be assigned to each of these definitions. Okay? But let us continue. This is the bold part. I actually bolded it and put it in red. If, however, they were not limited, but one were to say that the word has an infinite number of meanings, obviously, reasoning would be impossible. For not to have one meaning is to have no meaning. And if words have no meaning, our reasoning with one another and indeed with ourselves has been annihilated. For it is impossible to think of anything if we do not think of one thing. But if this is possible, one name might be assigned to this thing. I hope. Any questions on that? It can get kind of jumbled, but basically what Aristotle is saying there, okay, is that something has to be named. It has to be unique from everything else, okay? But you can have different meanings of words, okay, in a limited sense, okay? And those words can mean different things that we're saying at a different time or in a different sense. But if you have an infinite number of meanings and they're not correlated between each other, okay? In other words, there is no differentiation, okay, in time and space or in sense or in word or definition or in sentence, I should say, and how the word is used, and it's just infinite, then therefore words have no meaning. It's just gibberish, okay? Because you can't sit there and say, you know, house really means dog. Or dog means cat, okay? You know what I mean? You just can't have that, okay? So continue on the next slide.
Sir, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Sir, this guy who wrote this, it's so complex that it is going 20 feet above my head. How can Muhammad and his Allah would understand this logic?
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's kind of the point. They did not understand this logic because they don't have the source of the logic. But we'll highlight some more things. I will make it, I will be revealed, I will make it clear. Go on to the next slide, please. Law of the excluded middle. This one's a kind of a tough one, okay? But basically, everything must either be or not be. Go to the next one. Okay, for every proposition, either it's positive or negative, in other words, minus one, okay, equals minus one is true, or one equals one is true. So either positive, negative, are true, okay? Go to the next one, please. Okay, now again, this is from Aristotle. Maybe this is Plato. No, this is Aristotle. But on the other hand, there cannot be an intermediate between contradictories. But of one subject, we must either affirm or deny any one predicate. This is clear in the first place. If we define what the true and the false are, to say of what that is, well, I'm sorry, to say of what is that it is not, in other words, you can't say something is objectively true and then say it's false, okay? Of what is not that it is false, well, to say that it is true, and of what is not that it is not is true, so that he who says of anything that it is or that it is not, say either what it is true or what is false. Like I said, recap, you cannot say something is true and then say it is also false at the same time and in the same way. Okay? But anyway, continue on to the next slide. So, what is Tawheed? Now, you talk to Muslims saying, Tawheed is just one. We believe in one. One Allah, one just Tawheed. Yeah, they got to put down smoking that Tawheed, okay? Which hopefully we're going to wean them off the Tawheed addiction in this, okay? Go to the next one, please. Okay, Tawheed has three distinct theological points. Now, You can come up with something in Arabic, but I just came up with theological points, right? Three theological rules three theological propositions. In other words, to believe in Allah, you have to believe in all three of these things. Am I wrong on that? To my ex-Muslim friends, or?
Yeah. I just want to say that I used to be a pothead, and I know weed. I want to say that this word is misspelled. It's co-hated. So it should be the W, then the H.
Okay, Stephen, now hold on a second. Where were you? No. Where were you last night? We had a 10-minute conversation trying to figure out how to spell this word. And I got shot to pieces. You should have heard John Isaac. John actually got upset with you. He's like, what's wrong with you? T-A. And he. So I just, okay, I put it in there like that. I was done. I wasn't.
Steve, Google writes it like this, by the way.
Actually, when I was trying to Google to get this information, they actually spelled T-I-W something or other. I mean, so, yeah, but okay, but thank you for pointing that out, but yeah, I don't care if we're still smoking the Thai here. Okay, anyway, go on to the next point. All right. Okay. So we have Tahid El Rubba Dub Dub. Okay.
Rubabia.
Okay. Tahid R. See, look, Tahid. No, I spelled it wrong. I did spell it wrong. You were right. See, yeah, this is copy and paste. So you're right.
It's just about the weed problem I had.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Okay. So maintaining the unity of lordship. Go ahead to the next one.
Oops, sorry. Here we go.
Tahid al-Asma wa Sifat. Okay. Maintaining the unity of Allah's names and attributes. This is my favorite one. Go to the next one. Tahid al-Abadah.
I'm loving this.
Maintaining the unity of Allah's worship. Okay. Continue on, please. All right. So, Tahid, well, no, go back.
I'm sorry. I'm just making a point.
Tahid El, whatever. Lordship. Okay. Next one, please. Next bullet point. Okay. This category, and this is all taken from Islamic websites. This category is based on the fundamental concept that Allah alone caused all things, remember, all things to exist when there was nothing. He created or originated all that exists out of nothing. He alone is the sole creator, cherisher, and sustainer of the complete universe and all between it without any need from it or for it. Now, honestly, we Christians, we would say, yeah, that's God, right? Okay, he created everything out of nothing. He's the sole creator. There's nothing other than him that created everything, right? Right? Makes sense? Okay. I have no problem with that. Except this violates all the other propositions of Tahid. Now, go ahead. Click on the next point. Okay? No. Allah's throne, Allah's name, and attributes, the Quran, are all uncreated, right? They're actual things. His throne is an actual thing. His attributes, his hands, and blah, 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 his hands and all that stuff are actual things, okay? The Quran is an actual thing somewhere, but it's actually, it really exists. If you were to go in the realm where the Quran is, you could touch the Quran if Allah lets you. You know what I mean? But it is real. It exists. It is tangible, okay? Right? And remember, Allah said that he created everything that exists. And here's the thing, these things are not Allah. So it's not like I'm saying Allah created Allah. No, because they are not Allah, right? And nor are they anything but Allah. That in itself, again, is a contradiction of law and logic, which we'll get to in a moment. But as you can see here, right here, the doctrine of Tawhid in this first one is that Allah created everything that exists. Well, there are things, according to Islamic doctrine, that exist that are uncreated. And they are real things. So how does that... Anyway, go to the next slide. We'll get more into that. Go to the next slide. Again, violates the law of non-contradiction. Okay? Next slide. Okay? Next point. Okay? A equals Allah created everything that exists. Right? Next one. equals Allah's names and attributes. Quran, throne are real and they exist. Next one. A does not equal B. This is Islamic theology. A does not equal B. Allah did not create, so therefore, Allah did not create everything that exists, right? If things that exist, Allah didn't create them, and they are not Allah, okay? Then how can you say he created everything that exists with something that exists? You see what I'm saying? This also violates every single law, but I chose this one, the law of non-contradiction. This, you could also say the same thing, this violates the law of identity, okay? This also violates the law of the excluded middle, but for this purposes, it definitely violates the law of non-contradiction. Any questions? Any topics? Am I boring you guys?
Well, I'm trying to figure out so Allah creates everything. That's in the Quran. Allah's names and attributes, the Quran, the throne, are real and exist. So Allah, what you're saying is Allah had to create those things also?
No, according to Islamic doctrine, Allah created everything that exists, right? Anybody object to that? Okay. But there are things, Allah's names and his attributes, the Quran and the throne, are actual real things that do exist. Any problem with that?
No. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, therefore, since it states that Allah created everything that exists, and there are things, that actually really do exist, then Allah did not create everything that exists. A does not equal B. When the law of non-contradiction says this cannot happen, if you are going to say A is dependent upon B, then B must equal A, and A must equal B. Here, the Islamic doctrine is saying no. Okay? Well, actually, I should switch it around. It's actually saying B does not equal A. In other words, Allah's names and attributes in Quran, okay, in the throne, are real. That's B, and that does not equal A because Allah created everything that exists. So I did kind of screw that up.
Okay,
but
I do have a question.
Sure.
Okay, remember, according to Islam, Jesus made the bird into clay. So who made that? Was that Allah and Jesus, or just Jesus?
Again, this goes back to their violation of laws of logic. They'll say, but he did it with his permission. What does that mean?
Okay, if it's just permission, did Allah create it or not?
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Anyone else? I mean, you guys get that point. Actually, Swiss B does not equal A. That's actually more accurate.
You know, there were in the history of Islam, this was an actual the aspect about the Quran. Can you hear me? Or no?
You were just
again.
Go ahead.
Repeat it.
You know that there were two groups. One called the Ashirite, and the other one called the Mu'tazila. And the Mu'tazila said, because of this logical fallacy, they said it's not possible that the Quran is eternal. They said the Word of God is not eternal, because if it is, it means there's something eternal besides Allah. So the Mu'tazila said that. But the Ashirite, they were on the other side. They said, no. The Quran is eternal, but they really did come to a very good understanding, a conclusion of it, and that was that they beheaded the Mu'tazila.
Did they really?
So far, till now, we have many Mu'tazila in the Middle East, and they don't believe in Hadith, but they are considered as kuffar, because they don't believe in many hadith.
Right. So I ran out of time. I wanted to put more slides and stuff like that in there regarding the Mu'tazila conspiracy, not conspiracy. Either way, controversy. Mu'tazila's like a controversy, as well as the arguments from Maimonides or the Rambam against Tahitis. That's why I call him Tahiti Muslims, because he actually argued and said, wait, you have just turned one god into 99 gods, okay? So he's actually arguing his point, yeah, Okay. But somebody said, Eric, he needs to mention something Allah did not create to complete his point. Allah did not create his name. Allah did not create his attributes. Allah did not create the Quran. Okay? Allah did not create the throne. Right? Okay? Because these things are eternal. They have always existed. Okay? But here, and there are real things. There are real things in Islamic doctrine, or at least the Salafi, okay? Real things, okay, in Islamic doctrine. The non-Mu'tazilites, okay? Even, okay, you can say that the attributes, you know, the hand, the foot, the one eye, the shin, whatever. You can say, okay, if you're not a Salafi, you can say that these things, you know, are only symbolisms, okay? But I would have to argue against it. In other words, yeah, there are some places where these are metaphors, but no, it's actually really saying that, you know? Allah created Adam between his two hands, right? Or something like that, okay? This is something physical. This is a physical action that he did with his hands. But we'll get more into that anyway. I hope you see the point in that.
Chart. Okay, can you hold on just a second, Red? I need to address this here in chat. Charlie's been asking me to go over the... Was this John 17:22? I would love to discuss that, but we were getting way off topic. I'm not exactly sure why you want to. I don't know why you want to discuss that. Maybe if you could put an explanation in chat, I could look at it and see if it has anything to do with the topic. I'd appreciate it. Thanks. All right, Rad, go ahead.
All right, so let's go on to the next slide. Well, I hope you see the point on that, whoever that was, Travis. But yeah, so that was my little animation. This is false. I was going to put out a point, you know, but I couldn't do it. So, okay, continue on to the next slide. Okay. Tawheed al-Asma wa Sifat. Maintaining the unity. Yeah, what he said. Maintaining the unity of all attributes. Okay? Go ahead. Hit the next one. Allah is referred to without giving him the attributes of his creation. Remember what I said in the previous slide? Allah did not give himself any attributes of his creation. He did not create these things. But let's continue on, okay? Allah's name cannot be given to his creatures. Okay, we would say the same thing about Yahweh, right? Okay, you know, if anybody comes up and says, I am Yahweh, they're going to be stoned to death. Well, maybe not today. Maybe
under the Mosaic law.
Yeah, exactly, okay?
Yeah.
But you can, and even in Islam, you can take part of the name, you know, like, you know what I mean?
Abdullah.
Exactly, okay. But anyway,
that means slave of Allah, so it's not taking the name, it's defining him as it, so you cannot say that he took the name.
Okay,
of Allah.
Okay, all right.
Go ahead to the next one, go ahead. Allah's names and attributes are uncreated, and they are eternal. Any Muslim going to argue against that? Okay.
Well, hold on a second. Hold on. Just saying, Adam, didn't we just have this conversation a couple of weeks ago where they went in? Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Adam.
Allah actually stole it from Isa anyways, because most of these names are either in Bible, and some of the names are actually of the false god that Allah took. For example, the Rahman and Rahim, and there are so many names, Awwal wa Akhir, which is Jesus' title. So, like, Allah already took these names, which were already there for either a true God or a false God in the Arabia or in the Jerusalem. So, Allah already took them from somewhere.
But, okay, I thought there was something that you were saying that they had to memorize the 99 names of Allah, and then for some reason, Al-Azhar came in and they changed quite a few of them, said, well, it can't have the last name. And they replaced
them. So basically, if you look at it, there are almost 20 names in the names of Allah, which you will not find them in Quran at all. That's point number one. And we believe that sometime in the past, when certain names were so bad, for example, Al-Makir is a property of Allah, mentioned 3 times in Quran, but you will not find it as a name. So they removed it and they added something else, for example, Al-Rashid. This property of Allah, you will not find it in Quran. So these current 99 names that you see are in a Da'if hadith of Tirmidhi. You will not find anywhere else. That's just something that I found it out today, that it is in a Da'if hadith. I didn't know that it was in a Da'if hadith. But anyways, long story short.
So wait. They're changing or making up Allah's names and attributes as they kind of go along.
They have already done that.
No. Notice his eternal, names and attributes, they're changing.
Yeah.
That's the big one right there.
Yeah.
They did that in the past, and they are still doing it. Steve, you know which year they wanted to do change maybe like 10 additional names?
Father Zechariah did a big thing where he's the one who came out and started exposing this like in the 90s. And Al-Azhar almost instantly went out and they changed all the posters because they have the posters with the 99 beautiful names of Allah. They changed the posters and they took 20 off and they put 20 new ones in.
Where did they get
and,
the 20 new
wow.
ones? Where did they come
yeah.
from?
And guys, I can get you video of guys talking on TV saying in Arabic, talking to each other. Where the reporter is saying to this guy from Al-Azhar, saying, "Dude, all my life I've been learning that Allah's the Mudil and the Mu'akkad and quoting the 99 beautiful names. And when I do that, I get extra credits on Judgment Day because it's a good work, you know, considered a hasanat." He says, "And now you guys are telling me that the names are wrong? I got people."
If you recite these names on a tasbih once in the morning, once in the night, so all the sins that you have done the whole day will be forgiven. So that's a hadith as well that you have to recite the small hasana on a tasbih. What do you call tasbih, Steve? Rosary kind of a thing. What's it called in English?
Oh, those bead things?
Yeah, bead things.
Well, that's what it's called in English, the rosary. So that's weird. I wonder
the rosary has 33. The Islamic rosary has 101.
Wow. That's crazy talk.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, just real quick. Let's see. Where did it go? Animal is in chat, and he wants to know what a real quick definition of Tawheed is. And he said he was buffering at the beginning of the show and didn't
all right.
have that.
Well, pull up the slideshow again. So animal. So actually, we're going through the definitions of Tawheed. There are three of them. We are now in the second one, I believe. Okay. Tawheed al asma wa sifat.
Okay, hold on. Let me just maintain. The first one was maintaining the unity of lordship.
Correct.
Okay, and now the second one. All right. So go ahead.
Unity of lordship. What does that mean, Rad?
Go back to the unity of lordship. Okay, that means that Allah created everything. Okay, but there's nothing that is not created that Allah did not create. What would we say about Jesus? You know, everything was created through Him, by Him, for Him. He's the creator of all things. Right?
Anything that was made.
Exactly. But
so what does
case,
that have to do with unity? It sounds like Islam is just throwing words in.
It is.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're just kind of like, we'll get to that in a second. But anyway, go back to the next one.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's see. Allah's names and attributes are uncreated eternal, but we just learned that there are certain... Go ahead. Continue with the next one. Sorry. Allah's names and attributes are not Him, nor are they anything but Him. Is this a correct understanding of the Islamic doctrine? I mean, this is the most contradictory thing. When I heard this, I'm like, you're trying to explain something using words, but those words are contradictory to themselves, right? How can something be not Him, nor anything but Him?
Because if His attributes are not of Him, where are those attributes at? Are they outside of Him?
Exactly.
So then there would be Allah, and then His attributes are joined together somehow, together with Him, per se?
And this is why Maimonides said, dude, you're turning one God into 99 gods. But Maimonides has a weird theology. He's got this. He takes the opposite approach. He has this negative theology where, okay, you can't ascribe anything attributes to God that have human qualities. So he's goofy on his own point, which we can get into. But when they say the Jews believe in Tawheed, and Maimonides is the father of modern Judaism, other than Rashi, So, you know what I mean? So they're like, no, that's not what we want.
Well, no, that's right.
But anyway, continue on, please. Again, this violates the law of identity. It also violates the law of non-contradiction. In other words, all of these tahini stuff violates every law of logic, all three of these laws of logic in some way or form or another. I'm just highlighting certain points that stick out to me. Okay? But it violates the law of identity. How does it violate the law of identity? Go ahead. Click on the next one. In that the names have an infinite meaning and cannot compare to what the names mean in our realm. What do I mean by this? Okay? Okay, for instance, Allah's attributes, his hand. Well, that's a real thing. That's a physical thing, right? Okay? All right, well, if you're a Salafi. But no, there are certain attributes that even the Asharites or the other various sects will say, yeah, no, that's a real thing. Okay, but let's just say Allah's hand, for instance. The Muslim will respond, Allah's hand is not like our hand, but it's still a hand, right? When I say hand, you know what hand means. You have a visual representation in your mind. It might not be my hand. Okay, it might be your hand that you're looking at in your visual representation in your mind, but it's still a hand. It's not a claw, right? It's not a fin. Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, a foot.
Or a foot. Yeah. It's not something other than what a hand means. Now, if they want to say that, then again, remember, what violates the law of identity? What does the law of identity say? It states that something has to be what it is. And you can ascribe a limited different meanings with different words to something, because words do have different meanings depending on the context, okay? But in this case, they're not saying it doesn't depend on the context. They're saying it has an infinite number of meanings, in which case, you know what I mean? Okay? Do you see what I'm saying? Okay? I mean, there's one Muslim.
Yeah.
I actually looked for the video of Anthony Rogers. He actually has a great video on this. Okay, he actually says, he quotes one Islamic scholar that is arguing against he's arguing against the idea that, okay, Allah does not have a hand, a foot, a shin, or whatever. And he says that if Allah does not have these attributes, then what do we worship? A watermelon? I'm gonna tell you a funny thing about that, okay? I don't know if you guys ever heard this, but the watermelon thing meant something else to a bunch of people, or anywhere. I don't know, but it was sexual-wise with Muhammad. Muhammad had sex with a watermelon or something like that. And that's what Anthony thought this was talking about. That's what he thought that when people were saying that Muhammad had sex with a watermelon, he thought he was trying to figure out how the watermelon comes with the Islamic scholar. He was trying to figure it out, and he's like, no. So I totally misunderstood it. But anyway, point being is this is what an actual Islamic scholar said. I forget which one, but he's like, if Allah does not have these physical attributes, okay, are you against the Mu'tazilah, I believe? He said, then what do we worship, a watermelon, a potato? Actually, one of his videos, yeah, Act 17, it's the Mr. Potato Head. What does Allah look like? That was David Wood did it. That was inspired by Anthony on that. But anyway, continue on to the next thing. Okay, all right. Okay, for instance, well, this is what I was just saying. For instance, Allah's hand is not like our hand, but a hand is a thing. It has an identity. A hand cannot be a foot, nor can it be an eye. Anyway, continue on. So Allah's hand may not be like my hand, but it's still a hand. Continue on. Right?
Is that where you wanted to go, or did you have anything else?
No, I mean, I just explained what the slide was saying, so we can continue. Okay. Now here we get to Tahid el maintaining the unity of Allah's worship.
Ibadah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Devitt Ray said it best in chat. Ding dong. There you go. Oh, that's taking Adam's thunder.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, ding dong. My terminology for a specific thing.
Like, okay.
You know,
okay.
In my camel. What are my camels? What I said you want to do bang bang. I should put a ding dong. I thought I was quoting you, but that's right. Your thing was ding dong. So yeah.
Yeah. You get sued for copyright if you take Adam's phrase.
Exactly, yeah,
be careful.
Okay, I will get your video out of internet.
All right. So Tahid el Ibadah. Okay, the unity unity of worship. That is, the worship is to and for Allah alone. Must be maintained because He alone deserves to be worshipped. And He alone can benefit man as a result. Okay. That part, that's kind of weird. So they're only, I mean, this is a sidetrack here. So they're only worshiping Allah because He can benefit them, not because Allah deserves worship. I just wanted to throw that out there. That's a different scenario. But anyway, no Andrew Center or a meter, such a priest or holy man, yada yada, tech gems, you know, blah blah. The importance of directing all forms of worship to Allah alone is emphasized time and time again in the Quran, right? Okay, so we would agree that that God alone deserves to be worshipped. We would disagree that, you know, that the reason why we should worship Him is because we can get some benefit from it. Okay? No intercessor, we disagree with that because Christ, God Himself, is the intercessor or intermediary, you know, as such. But anyway, let's continue on with the next slide, please. Okay. No. Allah is one in this is the question you got to ask Muslims when they talk about Allah is one. Ask them, is Allah one in every sense of the word one? Okay? It's important. Is Allah one in every sense of the word one? In other words, it's just one blob. Okay? One thing. There is nothing different in this thing, if you will, or in this entity, or in this being. You can't judge its head from its foot, from its side, from its, you know what I mean? There's nothing distinctive in this. It is just this one, whatever it is. Okay?
So would that make, hold on, would that make Allah one-dimensional then?
Yeah, no, you can argue that, yeah. One-dimensional, you know what I mean? It's just a thing. I mean, it's just a...
Because he couldn't, if he's only a singular, he could not have two or three dimensions.
Well, not only could he not have two to three dimensions, but continue with the next point.
What about the fourth dimension?
This is what we're going to get to. Okay, so Allah is one in every sense. If Allah is one in every sense of the word, okay, because the Muslims may answer that way. If they do, then seriously, totally irrational here. But let's get to this. Okay, then what do Muslims worship? Remember, do they worship this potato, this watermelon, whatever? Okay, I mean, if he doesn't have any distinctive features, anything different, then, you know what I mean? Then why are they making up all these names, these attributes, these things that are supposed to be eternal and always existed that are not him and for him? Again, totally, completely irrational and illogical. But so what do Muslims worship? Allah, his attributes, Allah and his attributes? If he's just one in every sense of the word one, then he only has one attribute. Which one are they picking? Right? If he's not one, if he's not one in every sense of the word, okay, then again, then this violates everything else of their own doctrine. It's the law of non-contradiction. You see how this thing all loops back together? In other words, they have a dilemma. Okay, the dilemma is the one in the many. Okay. Which I didn't put this in the slide, in the PowerPoint, because that actually goes with this. The dilemma of the one and the many is the universe, is everything in creation, the cosmos, whatever you want to call it, is it of one substance or many substances? If it is one substance, then you can't tell a tree from a star. You can't, because it's all the same. There is nothing defining it. There is nothing that you can interpret the data, interpret the information stream, and say this is uniquely something. Anthony Rogers has a funny bit where he says, okay, fine, if you believe the universe is everything in the cosmos is created from the same substance, then when you're crossing the street, don't even bother to look, because you're not going to be able to see that truck coming down the road, because you're not going to, the truck could be a tree. Do you see what I'm saying? You have no frame of reference. There is nothing that you can say, I can distinguish between what a tree looks like and a truck looks like, because guess what? It's all the same substance. Okay? All right? Now, on the other horn of that dilemma, and this is that's the one horn of the dilemma, Allah is just one. It's just one whatever. That's one horn of the dilemma. As I've just explained through my analogy, that doesn't work. Okay? But then if you swing to the other horn of the dilemma, and that is the universe is made of different substances, or many substances. So yes, but guess what? Now you've got a problem. because there's no point of reference. If everything is different from everything else, how can I interpret what that other thing is? I can't name it. I can't, you know what I mean? We would not be able to interpret the data. Okay. Well, the same way, going back now, because now Islam swings to the other end of the pendulum, or the other end of the horns of the dilemma, and says, no, Allah is 99 names. But those 99 names are attributes. Okay, or another say, well, he has many billions more attributes. We only know the 99 names. The point being is this, okay, if you swing to that other horn of the dilemma, then you're just as well screwed either way, because now his names and attributes are so different from what he is, but nothing other than what he is. How can you differentiate? And plus, you violated your own rule.
So another episode of our live stream.
Who was just talking?
Okay. Did I just like melt your guys' minds right there with that? I mean, are your minds like, what?
Somebody.
But are you guys following along how this works? I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, others can explain it better, but are you guys, you know, following along? I mean, any objections, any questions, please let me know.
No, but I have quite a few scenarios that I want to run through, but go ahead.
All right, well, let me finish up with the slides.
Right.
I think we're almost done on this. Okay. So, go on to the next point. Keep going. All right, so what I just explained, okay, if Allah is one in every sense, then he can only be one attribute. But Tawhid says Allah has many attributes that are not him. Violation of law, not contradiction, and the law of identity. All right? So, I mean, it's violating all three of these laws here. All right? So the next point, if Allah is not one in every sense of the word one, and his attributes are not him, but they are not anything except him, then this violates not only the law of identity, the law of non-contradiction, but also violates the law of the excluded middle. Since either Allah is one in every sense of the word, or he is not one in every sense of the word. Okay? You see what I'm saying? You can't say Allah is one and then go and say, well, no, Allah is many attributes, and they are Allah, or not Allah. Do you see what I'm saying? Logically, this violates all of them. But continue on to the next one. Do I have another one? I'm not sure.
Nope, you're done.
Oh, that's it. Okay. But anyway, so that's my brief presentation of how Allah, the doctrine Tawhid, violates the law of logic. Make sense? You guys good? Brain's not melted?
I'm good. I like the one where you're violating the law of non-contradiction, because the law of non-contradiction is probably one of the most basic laws of logic that people can understand. You know, A cannot be non-A at the same time in the same relationship. And there was a couple of scenarios that I was looking at. Now, if somebody else wants to chime in real quick, feel free to go ahead and take your shot.
I just want to say one thing about the whole idea of logic, and you know how Islam deviates from logic, and yet how central logic is to truth, because the Bible says, "In the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God," and the Greek word is logos, and it, you know, and it also has to do with that Jesus is the wisdom of God, that these laws are eternal, the laws of logic and the logos. So it violates that, you know, with their, I call it cognitive dissonance within Islam, to believe in one thing and the exact opposite too at the same time. So.
Well, no, that's violating the laws of logic. You cannot hold. Well, no, it's actually 1984 spells it out. Okay, that's called doublethink. To hold two contradictory thoughts in your head at the same time and say they are true. Okay.
And America. I believe what's happening in America as we're getting away from God. We're getting away from those basic principles of logic.
Exactly. Totally. 100%. So here's the thing on Muslims and logic. The Muslims will all come up and say the doctrine of the Trinity doesn't make any sense. It's not logical, right? you know, over and over again. I mean, any point in Christian theology, say that just that's not logical. Well, they'll set up a straw man. They'll set up, you know, a thing like that. But say that's just not logical. That doesn't, you know, make any sense. But then when you approach them with this stuff on logic, and again, don't use this as a template. Use it. Use this as a template to further your understanding on this. Anthony Rogers, Roseland, Anthony Rogers and a bunch of others, they're the ones that I got this stuff from, and they pretty much will spell it out a lot better than I can, obviously. And I probably got a lot of stuff wrong, because they're going to probably correct me if I show this to them. Well, Anthony's going to be like, no, you kind of screwed that one up. But okay, whatever. Point being is this, when you approach them with this, their response will be always, universally, I have never had a response where this did not happen. They did not respond in this way. Was, well, we don't believe in logic anyway. We believe in Allah.
Well, and like I said before, logic and Allah doesn't go along. That's the standard narrative.
Exactly.
You do not look at Allah through logic.
Exactly. You can't. Because to do so, because if you did, you'd be like, yeah, they pretty much made this stuff up as they went along. You know what I mean? But yeah, anybody else?
I have a verse that I want to put up here for the test. Let's go to chapter 2, verse 23 of the Quran, where it reads, "And if you are in doubt as to that which we have revealed to our servant, then produce a chapter like it and call on your witnesses besides Allah if you are truthful."
Okay,
awesome. So what do you want to do?
Well, I want to figure out what sense does this make? If you were going to say, okay, if you're doubting what the Quran teaches, then just produce something like it. So if I open up the Quran, let me open up the Quran and turn to, let's go to, say he's gone. Let's do this one. The help.
But
of
you
God.
Do realize you are asking to create such a contradictory book. Do you understand what you are saying? Like so.
Well, I mean,
any Tom, Dick, and Harry can create such a contradictory book.
Well, not a contradictory book, but let's see. If you're worried about produce
chapter.
A chapter like it. Okay, so let's go to chapter 109. Chapter 109. Say, O you unbelievers, I do not worship what you worship, nor do you worship who I worship, nor will I worship what you worship, nor will you worship who I worship. To you, your way, to me be my way.
Okay, so in that one, there is another problem. It says, Ma ta'lamun. You, in Arabic, it says, Ma ta'lamun. Stephen Hussein,
yeah.
Can Ma be used for a living being?
Okay. Well, the point that I'm trying to make is the point I'm trying to make is that is such a stupid sounding verse.
You gotta hear it in Arabic.
All right. Okay. Well. Okay. Can I hear it in Arabic? Let me.
I'll get it. John Isaac. He can do it better though.
Yeah. Okay. Can I hear it? Can somebody say it in Arabic?
Open it. It's a real good one.
It's the same horse.
Surah al-Nas. Falak al-Nas. Surah al-Nas. Ulah al-Nas. Rabb al-Nas.
Surah al-Kafirun.
Yeah. Was that al-Kafirun, the one that you were reading?
Yeah, al-Kafirun, yeah. But I don't, yeah. I read it in Arabic.
Okay, read it in Arabic for me. Okay.
قل يا أيها الكافرون لا أعبد ما تعبدون ولا أنتم عابدون ما أعبد ولا أنا عابد ما عبدتم ولا أنتم عابدون ما أعبد لكم دينكم ولي دين. There is nothing good in it.
Oh my gosh, it's beautiful. I mean, if you would, is that the actual classic Arabic that you're saying? It's beautiful.
No, there is mistakes. As Adam said. For example, وَلَا أَنْتُمْ عَابِدُونَ مَا أَعْبُدْ مَا is used for the
non-living.
Non-living. If I would like to speak about Allah who is living, then I should say مَنْ لَا أَنْتُمْ عَابِدُونَ مَنْ أَعْبُدْ مَنْ It's not ma. It's written in Quran ma. It's a very clear error in grammar in Arabic.
Okay, I was just pointing. I was just pointing out how low of a standard is being set by chapter. What is that? Chapter 2, verse 23. And then when you refer to chapter 109 of the Quran, how low that standard gets. I mean, I've heard rap songs sound better. I hate to say that, but I've heard rap that sounds better than that.
Yeah. Most of the verses of Quran.
How are we wrong? What is this?
It's based on like music or it's called saga, Arabic saga. This is the common speech. In Arabic, before Muhammad, like 100 years or 200 years, all speech was like that, and all of them like poetry, like same way. For the same point, can we open Surah 22, verse 52?
Yeah, let me get this reference to watermelons off my desktop here. Okay.
Chapter 4. Okay, by the way, Surah An-Najm.
Okay, what was it again, John? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Adam. I'll let you talk here in just a second. John, what was the verse? Chapter and verse?
Surah 22, verse 52.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Adam.
No. Let's finish that. 22:52. Are you going to show it on the screen?
Yeah, I'll put it right up here.
Do that first.
Yes, I got it. Share screen. Golly, there's too many steps in here. What is the streaming art to do a better job of this?
So I think he is showing the
satanic verses.
Yeah,
verse.
So that's what I was actually about to say.
Quran itself says that Satan can make verses like Allah. Here we can read it, for example, in international, and we didn't send before you, speaks about Muhammad, any messenger or prophet, except that when he spoke, Satan throw into it, onto his speech, but Allah abolishes what which Satan makes throw in, and then Allah makes precise his verses. It means that all prophets before Muhammad was when they speak, Satan goes with and tells them verses from himself. And Muhammad was not exception. Was the same like all these messengers. Which means Satan came to Muhammad and gave him like inspiration or verses. He put in Quran, and after that Allah abrogated these verses and fixed the situation. And when you go to Tafsir, you find the Tafsir about the satanic verses in Surah An-Najm, as Adam said.
Yeah. So Surah An-Najm partially was created by Satan, which Allah abrogated. So Allah, Jibreel was giving verses to Muhammad, and suddenly after 20 verses, Jibreel went away. And then Satan came in the form of Jibreel and started giving him some additional verses, which we don't know how many because they are not part of Quran, but at least three of them are part of Quran. So if you can open 53, verse number 19 to 22. Let's see what happens over there. Go to Quran.com instead of Corpus. Go to Quran.com.
Why am I on Quran.com? I'm at the Corpus. I'm at Corpus. Oh, you want to see everything. Okay, which one am I going to here? Quran.com?
Quran.com, yeah.
Quran, this is Quran.com.
Yep. So Surah An-Najm, which is 53. And verses number 19 to 23. This is QuranX.com, brother. It will show one verse at a time.
Okay, so just
one verse at a time.
Yeah, okay, I'm being a loser here. So Quran.com. I should have just done what you told me to do at the beginning. Sorry.
/53/19-23. 19-23. Okay, now we will have all these verses. Okay, so let's zoom in so that we can read.
Okay, let me make it bigger so people can see this so they don't think I'm trying to pull one over on them.
Okay,
now have you considered the idols of Lot and Uzzah? And the third one, Manat, as well. Do you prefer to have sons while you attribute to him daughters?
This is a very stupid translation. Add Pechtal or Sahih International as well. Go to settings on the top right corner. Yes, settings. Choose translation. Add Sahih International and Pechtal Khan.
Sahih translation.
Sahih, so, yeah,
did I miss it?
It's the third one from the top, and Pechtal is fourth last.
Fourth what? Pechtal?
Yep. This down, down, down. Down?
Where?
Down, buddy.
Oh,
stop.
Well, right where it says Pechtal.
Yep. Okay, now click on anywhere outside.
Okay.
Okay, now.
Okay, Emanat, the third. Okay, Emanat, the third of other. Are yours the males and his the females? And
no,
indeed,
that's for the question of Allah, suddenly. Are you giving me females and keeping males for yourself? Allah suddenly changed it. And then he said, are you giving me all females, keeping males for yourself? What are you doing? You see, that's how Allah is so-called abrogating this. He's like, where are the males for me?
Hey, but you know what? It says in the Quran that God does not abrogate unless he brings something that is like or better. So this is better than what was before, you know. So
Logically, you are right, brother. Logically, you are right. So basically, if we go into tafsir, in Asbabul Nazur, go to altafsir.com. Altafsir.com.
Al.
A-L. Altafsir.com. And to chapter number 82, verse
wait
number 52,
a hold
John
on.
Isaac said.
Okay. Altafsir.com.
Tafsir. Altafsir. Not Tafsir. You guys say Tafsir and then you
Taf,
say
Tafsir. Tafsir.com.
Tafsir. Tafsir. S-I-R.
If you say Tawheed.
So, guys, we have children in the room, so they can't pronounce
okay.
things right.
I don't understand what I'm doing here. Okay, hold on. Let me just Google it. Altafsir. What the heck?
Altafsir.com.
Doggone it. I'm getting ticked off here. There we go. Altafsir. Okay, is this it?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Sorry. I'm going to bookmark.
So, John Isaac's verse, the verse of John Isaac. I love John Isaac when he shows these.
Okay, where am I? Why is...
Click on the left top second, the tafsir, second, the tafsir. Okay, zoom a little, plus, plus.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so.
One more. Okay. 2252. Surah 22, verse 52. Surah. 22. You have to first select Surah.
Oh, yeah. I was meaning to do that. 22. Okay, I don't. Okay, verse 52, you said?
52.
5-2.
Select Asbabul Nazul. Yes. Select Asbabul Nazul.
Where is that?
Where Jalalain is written. Click it. Select the third one.
Okay.
Come down. Scroll down. Read and enjoy.
Where am I reading? Where do we want me to read? Start at the beginning or? Never we send it. Okay, go ahead. Okay. No, go.
Read the whole thing.
Okay. Never sent we a messenger or a prophet before thee, the commentators of the Quran said, when the messenger of Allah, Allah bless him and give him peace, saw that his people were shunning him, he was aggrieved by the rejection of the message he brought them, and he secretly wished that Allah, exalted as he, reveal something to him which would bring him and his people closer to each other, keen as he was to see them accept faith. One day he sat in one of the congregations of the Quraysh, or of Quraysh, which attracted a huge number of its members, and he wished that Allah, exalted as he, does not reveal to him on that day anything that might repel them from him. Allah, exalted as he, revealed to him then Surah Al-Najm, which you said, by the star when it's, whatever, that steadeth? What is that? Steadeth?
Set.
What?
Means set. Set. The star also set, just like sun and moon. So
okay,
that part,
all right. Surah 53, the messenger of Allah, bless him and give him peace, recited it when he reached, have ye thought upon Alat and Aluza and Manat, the third, the other, 53, 19 through 20, the devil put on his tongue, the devil put on his tongue, the devil put on his tongue what he had secretly wished and hoped for and said, these are the mighty cranes. sins, and their intercession is hoped for. When the Quraysh heard this,
that's what I said.
Okay. The Quraysh heard this. They were very pleased. The messenger of Allah, Allah bless him and give him peace, carried on reciting until the end of the surah and then prostrated. All of the Muslims.
Repeat this. Muhammad prostrated to Allah, Al-Uzza, and Al-Manat the third, as they are the mighty Karenans or Karakin. Yeah, cranes. Thank you. See, I cannot pronounce English words right. So, and then he prostrated to them, and all the Muslimin followed and prostrated. Read next.
Okay, I forgot where I left off at. Okay, they were very pleased. The Messenger of Allah, bless him, give him peace, reciting until the... Okay, all the Muslims followed suit and prostrated, and all the idolaters who were present prostrated too. All those who were present, whether Muslim or disbeliever, prostrated except Al-Walid ibn al-Mughirah and Abu Yabu Sabian al-Al, an ass who had been advanced in age, could not prostrate. But they both grabbed a handful of dust and put their foreheads on it. The Qureshi then dispersed, happy with what they heard. They said, Muhammad.
For the time being, if we can stop over here. So imagine, all the idolaters, means the Kufar, Muhammad, all the Muslimin, everyone prostrated to who? Allah, Al-Uzza, and Al-Manat. So Muhammad by himself did shirk. And shirk, according to Allah and according to Quran, can never be forgiven.
Whoa.
John Isaac?
Wow.
Am I right in saying that? Can Allah forgive shirk at all?
John?
Yes. Yeah, it's no, for... It's just no, but...
I got a question about that then. If Allah cannot forgive shirk, what good would it do me, a kufar, somebody who commits shirk for worshiping Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, what good it would it do to me to convert to Islam?
When you first time convert, then you are reborn. But after that, if you commit shirk, then full stop. Then that's the end of the discussion.
Okay, so Allah can...
Allah does forgive us right now of shirk to just bring us in. But then if we commit shirk as Muslims, then we're in trouble.
There's another theology over here.
Is that how it is? Is if you come into Islam, all is forgiven.
All of the previous things are forgiven, and now you are reborn, kind of a concept, which they took from Bible anyways. But then afterwards Allah does not forgive shirk. Full stop. Muhammad was a Muslim.
Let me just chime in on this. It's worse than all that because, again, remember, going by logic, if A is true, then the inverse of A is true, right? The negative is true. So here you have, okay, Allah saying that the only unforgivable sin is shirk, okay? Clearly he does forgive shirk in a new convert, as well as he does. You can ask Muslims this. If they slip in little shirk, big shirk, whatever, okay, and they quickly come out of it, they repent before they die, then that repentance is accepted. Here's why this becomes a major problem. Because the Muslims will say, shirk is the only sin you will not be forgiven for. You can't repent of it after you die. They will actually say that. You cannot repent of shirk after you die. In other words, if you die in shirk and you haven't repented that shirk, you cannot be forgiven. So the inverse of this is true. That means every other sin they can commit, adultery, eating pork, whatever, okay? All right? They can die on that. They can die on those sins and not be repented in this realm, in this reality. But when they go into the next realm, the next reality, after they die, those sins can be forgiven. So what's the point of repentance on anything else? Just don't commit shirk. Or repent of that shirk before you die. You see what I'm saying?
Or recite those 99 names of Allah in the morning and at night, but just make sure that you recite the new ones. Not the old ones, but the new ones. Make sure you...
Right.
Okay, and if we're all Muslims when we were first born, and then we went away and we became Buddhist, Christian, whatever, so then why is Allah receiving us? So he's breaking his own religion.
If you revert out of Islam, then when you die, your body is in the grave. Allah will send an angel with the sledgehammer, and he will bang you with the sledgehammer on your face so hard that if the jinns and the humans will hear that, their ears will burst open. That's how big the bang will be.
My point was, if Allah's claiming that all of us are Muslims, but then, you know, let's say we're 9 years old, 12 years old, we turn to Buddhist or Hindu or Confucius or whatever. So then he would not be giving us a free pass to come back into Islam, because we were Muslims all along in the beginning, you know, from birth or in our mother's or in our father's womb or our father's loins. So see, he's breaking his own religion.
Maybe they could pull that one guy that's in the UK that, Williams, Peter, whatever, that one guy that you brought up on the show that one day, Rad, with the information from Ijaz, hasn't he been a Muslim? Not a Muslim? Is a Muslim? Not a Muslim?
Paul Williams,
yeah. Maybe, what's that? I mean, is that guy going to make it?
No, probably not. Actually, I should contact him, see if he's still breathing. But anyway.
Okay, Adam had something that he wanted to add.
Well, no, actually, I got to add to this because it's actually worse than what you all have been portraying. Okay, because, well, first of all, Muslims believe, correct me if I'm wrong on this, okay, they don't believe pretty much everybody is born a Muslim per se, but everybody is born in a state of innocence, okay, in a state of being totally dependent on God. And our parents, okay, or caretakers or whatever, they teach us the shirk, they teach us the religion, or they teach us the true Islam. Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing. And actually, Paul writes against this, okay, because that was actually a common kind of heresy that was starting out in Christianity. Okay, here's the thing. So, okay, let's say that's true. Let's say everybody is born in a state of innocence, and only by teaching about Islam, you give someone a choice to either accept Islam or refuse Islam, okay? And so you got a 50-50 chance, right, that they might refuse Islam. Not only that, but, I mean, maybe you're not a good Muslim, so maybe you're telling them this and you're a hypocrite, and they're not going to hear it right, so they're not going to become a Muslim, right? So here's the thing. Then why tell them about Islam? I mean, if you truly care about an infant or a child's soul, okay, or the child growing up, why teach them about Islam at all if they have a chance of actually rejecting this Islam, right, and going to hell? I mean, wouldn't you care more for them if you just didn't even tell them? you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And actually, Paul writes about that, you know, where he says, you know, what should we do? Should we just keep on sinning? Let sin abide? No. Okay, or when he writes and he says about the law convicted me of sin. Does that mean that we do not, you know, that we reject the law? I'm paraphrasing there. Absolutely not.
Yes,
in other words, he's saying what I'm saying, I should say, or I'm saying what he's saying. It's a better rephrase of that. But basically, the argument was at that time, if by knowledge of good and evil, by knowledge of Christ, okay, comes the opportunity, okay, to reject that knowledge of Christ or that knowledge of truth, then why tell them about the truth to begin with? You know what I mean? You know, and again, that's a flawed reasoning, more flawed reasoning of Islam.
So you actually do not know the basic doctrine. That's why you are saying it like this. In fact, Allah created the room of each and every person beforehand.
Okay.
And they are in a specific location. The roof is created. Allah already showed them himself, And Allah said, who is your Lord? And they said, you are my Lord, and we accept you. And when we will go to this world, we will never forget you, etc., all the crazy crap. So they already acknowledge the Ruh in the Arwah, already acknowledge Allah and everything. Now, when the Ruh is put, Ruh is the spirit, is put into the human, when he is born inside the mother's womb, that's another problem where the angel is talking from inside the womb of a mother, anyhow. That is the location where Allah did not give him all the Ruh, all the memory. So now, Quran actually says that we created everyone on the fitra, which of the deen of Islam. But once again, when he came to this world, the memory is lost. So now...
So Allah made them forget. What a wonderful Allah.
Yeah, I was about to ask that. So it's his fault that we forgot.
Great.
Because he's all everything.
Yeah.
And I have a question for this abrogation. And Allah made them forget or made him to forget. Why Allah revealed the verse, then let people forget it from the beginning? It's not logical.
Right. It's not logical.
It's a miracle, John.
I wrote something down here that I want to interject into this. Okay. According to Muslims, would they say that Allah's word is perfect?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. You would say that Allah's word is perfect. Okay. Would they also agree that his word cannot be changed?
Correct.
Okay. Then please explain to me, if the law of abrogation means that they are abrogating something was stronger when it was supposed to be already perfect to begin with?
Yes.
But it wasn't then it wouldn't have been perfect if they're replacing it with something that is stronger, something more perfect.
I have a Quran verse for you. I have a Quran verse for you. Don't ask about things that you knew it would harm you. You see, you're not obeying the Quran. That's why you need
doubt.
And Quran also said in chapter number 5, verse number 101, that, O Kafir, if you wanted to ask question, you should have asked question when the Wahi is being Nazul on Muhammad. After that, you cannot ask question.
But he's been dead for 1,400 years. What the heck am I supposed to do?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
yeah.
Hussein's words come into play. Do not ask question.
Killing me.
That doubt actually means you'll get wise and you'll be educated and you'll leave this pagan religion.
Which is what happens when people start asking questions. But here's something even more interesting.
Yep.
Okay. So some Quranic, because the Quran, I mean, there is debate over when the verses fit, when they were revealed. You know what I mean? Because the Quran is not in order of the verses revealed. In other words, but there is one verse, okay, where it says, today I have perfected your religion. What do you mean he perfected it? Now, most Muslims say that's the last verse of the Quran.
No, there are so many other verses afterwards.
Exactly, right. But no, here's the thing. What do you mean today you perfected it? Okay, what do you mean today you've given us this religion, Islam, and today you perfected it? What do you mean? What you were given us before? Was it perfect? So you had to... make it perfect over 33 years? Now we're getting the perfect? What happened? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the irrationality.
Busted. All are busted.
Yeah, and there's, you know, this, I think this show tonight and what you did here, Rad, I think is just absolutely fabulous. Because when we start looking at, you know, I'm a history guy. I'm kind of a concrete guy. I'm not kind of an abstract logic thinking, applying all that type of stuff. So when I think of, you know, problems with the Quran, I'm going to be thinking of, you know, what we would, the anachronisms that we find in there, the historical problems. You might want to look at some of the contradictions. But when you start really examining a lot of these problems or some of these problems with logic, it's just kind of, it's right up in your face. And then when you combine that with the lack of the historicity surrounding it, why people, well, I guess I know why people would still believe it, is because their spirit, this is just me saying this, isn't the sponsors of the show ascribing to this, because we don't want the sponsors to get in trouble here. But I believe that they are just spiritually blinded, just spiritually blinded to the obvious, spiritually blinded to the truth.
Oh, it is.
The devil has blinded them who had no love for the truth.
No, it's supernatural.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be.
Exactly.
The main thing, I mean, you're planting seeds, okay, in your discourse, your dialogue with Muslims, either way. 20, 30 years from now, you know, the young man that you're talking about, assuming that he survives a suicide bomb and everything like that, he might convert to Christianity. And another thing I want to stress, okay, now, when someone leaves Islam and let's say they become an atheist or whatever, you know, we can't give up there. I mean, yeah, they've made a lateral move. But basically, they are no better off or no worse off, okay? They just made a lateral move spiritually. Physically wise, you know, they are better off because I honestly think if you follow this God, well, no, I can't really say that because, okay, let's say, so you follow this God Allah, and if you are a male, okay,
then you are the best.
Okay, then you are the best. And if you have sex outside of the laws and norms of Islam, you deserve to get stoned to death because you are just that stupid.
Hey,
I mean,
but why would you want to do that outside? Because the law allows that you can do marriage and you can divorce her the next day.
Exactly.
So why would you even want to do that? I would suggest pay her
and sign
a contract and then divorce her the next day. What's the problem?
That's my point. I mean, there is no reason for you to have Islamic illegal sex, okay, if you are a male, because it gives you every opportunity to commit every one of your male's, you know, 14-year-old perverted desires. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's from your city, man. You know what I mean? Especially if you read the Islamic history, okay? Islamic history gets really confusing with the names, okay? Well, it's tribal, so they always change their names anyway. You know, like Native American tribes, you know, or members, you know, they look up, you know, I'm going to take my new name, et cetera, and they would often change it. But another thing that makes it so difficult, I mean, you've got to, like, flow chart this out, because seriously, you have, I mean, cousins, brothers, sisters becoming aunts, uncles, nephews, mothers. You know what I mean? Oh, it is so intermarried, okay? I mean, on a first generation, on a first cousin level basis, that you can honestly have, okay? Well, for instance, Aisha, okay?
Hey, radical.
Yeah,
radical. You are thinking too much. You can adopt a small child that you like. When she reaches 9, just marry her.
Exactly. No, exactly.
That's legal. 100% legal and allowed.
Exactly. Well, not only that, but let's say you do have sex outside of Islamic doctrines and practices, and you produce a bastard. Okay? Well, guess what? It's a female bastard. You didn't get stoned or killed for it? Okay, fine. Whatever. You can now marry that child or have sex with that child. You know what I mean? Your own child. I mean, it is that.
Your own grandchild. Your own grandchild. Like, for example, it was your son who did illegal sexual intercourse.
Or your wife that had an adultery.
Oh, no, you got to stone that. No, I'm sorry, you got to stone that woman. The wife commits adultery, she's just got to go. Okay.
Yeah, but not the baby. Not the baby.
No, the baby, yeah. Then you can have sex with that baby. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just nikah her. Give her money and have sex with her.
I mean,
the generous Quran, that's what it really is called, the generous Quran.
Generous
to the penis.
What one of my jobs a while ago, I worked in the oil and gas industry for a little while. And one of the things these Arab Muslims would talk about, these were Saudis, Iraqis and stuff. They would talk about how they would go to Yemen. This before the Yemen war broke out, obviously. But they would order up these girls from Yemen, these, you know, 11, 12-year-olds, okay, and they would marry them. And they would have sex with them, and then they would send them back and just give them out. I'm like, dude, that's prostitution. Like, yeah, I know. You're all, like, happy about it, man. I'm like, dude, you disgust me. Okay? I mean, yeah.
Where was this, Rand? Where did you say this was?
Oh, no, this was, like, several years ago. It was one of my first gigs working in IT. I worked for in the oil and gas industry for support and maintenance and stuff. And so I would meet and talk to, you know, all kinds of different people. But no, I remember specifically these Saudis and these Iraqis, they were talking about it and how they would get young girls from Yemen. And, well, I'm going to be kind of graphic here, but they say you just enter them a little bit, just open them up. So it's not that big of a deal. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
Dude, every Muslim guy's wife has the fear that this Muslim will marry another one and will not even tell her. Or maybe even tell her, but he will marry. And all the ex-Muslims and Muslims can agree to that particular fact that they have this fear 100% because they cannot publicly, legally say anything to them.
The fear of suspicion.
Well, look at the laws in Saudi Arabia. Now, they did change this because of total outrage. But in Saudi Arabia, it used to be, okay, seriously, this is only going back a few years.
No, they cannot remove polygamy. That's
No, that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about this, okay? So, okay, there was a case in Saudi Arabia just a few years ago where a woman was getting a crap beat out of her, okay, by her husband. I mean, she's a young thing, whatever. She called her dad. Her dad went to the apartment complex, okay? Pound on the door, you do not hit my daughter, okay? The cops showed up, okay, the religious police showed up, and they said, no, he can do whatever, she is no longer your daughter, okay, she is his wife, he can do whatever he wants to, and they arrested the father, okay, either he beat the girl to death, or she jumped out of the balcony, or he threw her out of the balcony, either way, she's dead, and there was a great outcry where they actually had to change that law, because they were forced to in the U.N., not because it was non-Islamic, no, but because the UN said you're going to change that law, or we're not doing business with you. You know what I mean? Anything.
Okay, guys, what we have to do here, I mean, and that's just, Rad, I get it, man. That's some of the sickest behavior and some of the sickest sense. You know, when you start looking at applying logical treatment of other people, that's just. It's just sad. I have to run tonight because I have something going on at 7 and I have to eat supper before I get there.
Real quick, I got to mention this. We will have a PSA coming out. But as of right now, Jamal, if you have ordered Jamal, okay. We have nothing to do with that anymore. I'm just saying. Okay? We have absolutely nothing to do with Jamal. Okay? We didn't know nothing about no. Yeah, we got nothing to do with it. As a matter of fact, we can't even reach them. I can't even reach my contact for Jamal. It just comes back. The phone number's been disconnected. Looks like it was a fly-by-night company. But we do have, exclusively, we are hiring Aisha to promote her feminine hygiene product, complete with Mishmak applicator. Just to let you know, it is made the secret ingredient in this feminine hygiene product. Can anybody guess what the secret ingredient is?
Not camel urine. I'm hoping it's
not. No, absolutely not. It is Zamzam water.
There you go. That's
carrot water. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah. Okay, so the bottom line is, if you have gotten your complimentary jar of Jamal, throw it in the trash. Don't use it. I'm not taking any legal responsibility for it.
They can't throw it in the trash because it is evidently declared a biohazard. So you pretty much have to dispose of it.
Take it to your local. You can't get a hold of him. He can't get a hold of him. So.
No, they're gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
For the buyers.
Oh, no, screw them because, yeah, no.
All right, guys, we got to run. Everybody that came tonight that was in chat, thank you for coming. I appreciate your input and your knowledge being brought to this subject. Everybody here in chat are in the studio. Again, thank you for all your comments, keeping the conversations going and keeping it informative and entertaining. Yeah, I got a couple comments that said this place is more entertaining than some other place. So we must.
Well, great.
Yeah, I don't know if it. I'm not sure if it. Yeah, we had a ton of people in chat tonight. Good night. So, yep, feeling good about.
No, you guys need to bring me
a mouse. Okay. Alrighty. All right. God bless y'all. I got to run. We'll see you next Tuesday on Radio Free Kafiristan. God bless. All right, let me close it up over here on Blog Talk Radio, and we'll see.